Hi, this is Bernie Wides, the Naturalist, back on the air, and today's show is sponsored by Hearst Ranch, which is this tremendous place that the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. And if you want some more information, you can go to hearstranch.com. So that's www.hearstranch.com. So today's program is, this is the Naturalist program, Bernie Wides, and a couple of weeks ago, I took a trip to Puerto Rico. So this is going to be a naturalist tour of Puerto Rico. Now, Puerto Rico is a nice big island with many, many different ecosystems. So I'm going to talk about some of the highlights that I covered when I went to Puerto Rico. The first place that we stayed in was San Juan. And San Juan is worth a visit. And the natural history of San Juan has a lot to do with its history, because San Juan is in the Eastern Caribbean. And it's a volcanic island, like most of the islands in the Caribbean. So it has a lot of mixed terrain, hills and valleys and all that. But the important thing, when the Spanish invaded Puerto Rico, they made it a strategic place and built two huge forts protecting the harbor, because the Spanish ships that were going to the New World, as it was called, to Mexico and Central and South America for gold, they had to pass Puerto Rico. So it sort of was protecting the sea lanes. So that's why the natural history comes into play also. So we're going to move along now. I'm going to talk about one great place in Old San Juan to visit. It's called the Butterfly People, and it's a beautiful shop. If you have any interest at all in butterflies, these people buy butterflies from farms all over the world, and they have a great method of preserving them. They buy them at the peak of their beauty when they emerge from their chrysalis, that's their cocoon, and then they treat them, and they make these beautiful displays. And the young woman that I spoke to there was very nice and friendly, and it's in Puerto Rico, and it's called the Butterfly People, and I'll quickly give you their email, www.butterflypeople.com. And then from San Juan, we took a short flight to the island of Vieques. Now, you may remember hearing about Vieques in the news the last couple of years, because the U.S. military, basically the Navy, had a huge chunk of the land that they owned on Vieques. And they used it as a bombing range and to test out, to teach pilots how to do bombing. So you'd think it would be a terrible place, but there's just a small area that's still closed to the public where there may be unexploded munitions. But the rest of it was given back, in fact, the whole island was given back to Puerto Rico, which is a part of the United States. It isn't a state, but it's sort of a protectorate, or I don't know exactly its political status. But the people live there, they can vote in local elections, but they can't really vote in national elections. So we went to Vieques because it's beautiful. We stayed in a beautiful B&B overlooking the Caribbean. And we went to visit a place that's called, Mosquito Bay. Now, oh yes, the interesting thing about if you go to Vieques is that miles and miles and miles and miles of natural, beautiful, untouched beaches that, of course, the Navy never used. And these beaches are beautiful. The water's great for snorkeling. It's beautiful. It has this azure blue color. And you can just drive in and park almost any place you want and wade into the water and then snorkel off the beach. But the main thing that I wanted to see on Vieques was Mosquito Bay. So I'm going to tell you the story of Mosquito Bay and why it's a great place to visit. First of all, it's called Mosquito Bay. It has nothing to do with mosquitoes, because when we were there, we didn't have any mosquitoes at all. That was last month, at the end of February, and it's a great time to go there. So it's also called the Bioluminescent Bay, or Bio Bay. It's perhaps the world's largest and brightest. The luminescence is caused by a microorganism called a dinoflagellate. Now, a dinoflagellate is a phytoplankton. I think in one of my early talks, I spoke about the food chains and the oceans, and I said that down near the bottom of the food chain are phytoplankton, which are these miniature plants. They're only a few microns in size, and you know a micron is a millionth of a meter. So microns are critters are pretty small. So this phytoplankton grows in that bay, and it's called it's a dinoflagellate, and it has a nice scientific name called pyrodinium. And you know pyro means fire, so it's a perfect name for this little critter. Okay, so that's down at the bottom of the food chain. So the bay, which I'll talk about now, okay, as I said, it's caused by this microorganism, which glows whenever the water is disturbed, leaving a trail of neon blue light. I remember when I used to work on Long Island and I would canoe in Great South Bay, and occasionally, every time you took a paddle of your canoe, a stroke, the water would glow. But it was nothing like this. So we went out on a boat, and well, I'll tell you some more about the natural history of it, then I'll tell you about the experience. Okay, a combination of factors create the necessary conditions for bioluminescence. Red mango trees grow around this bay. And what red mango trees do, they're, I call them an evergreen deciduous tree because they always have green leaves, but they're always losing their leaves. And the leaves fall off into the water, and these are dead leaves, and they start to decompose. And the bacteria in the water decompose the leaves, releasing the nutrients into the water column. And what nutrients do they release? Nitrates and phosphates and other things that we call fertilizer. And the these plants, as I said, these tiny little dinoflagellates, eat on the bacteria that does that breaks down the plants. So that's why they say that the red mango trees are important to have there. Okay, so that's one of the factors. There's plenty of food for the pyrodidiums. And the water is cool enough and deep enough, and a small channel to the ocean keeps the dinoflagellates in the bay. This small channel is the result of Spanish ships' attempts to choke off the bay from the ocean's waters. Now you might say, why did the Spanish want to choke off that bay from the ocean waters? Because the ocean waters would have flushed out the bay and gotten rid of the population of these microorganisms, the pyrodiniums. Okay. This small channel is the result of Spanish ships' attempts to choke off the bay. The Spanish believed that the bioluminescence they first encountered was the work of the devil, El Diablo in Spanish, and tried to block the ocean waters from entering the bay by dropping huge boulders in the channel. The Spanish only succeeded in preserving and increasing the luminescence. So, because they cut down on the ocean circulation, so of course, these critters thrive. You know, they're so small, they can't really move by themselves. That's why they're called plankton. The word plankton means wanderers. They can only go where the currents push them. So this bay has innumerable population of these pyrodiniums. So what we did is we took our bathing suits along, and we went out on a pontoon boat. You know, a pontoon boat, you know what it looks like? It has two pontoons with a space in the middle underneath, and they hang the motor between the two pontoons. It's very good for shallow waters, and it's very stable. They use them a lot in Florida, where there are a lot of older people in the communities, and they use pontoon boats because they're very stable. So what we did was we put on bathing suits, and we waited till dark. And by the way, you can't do this all the time because if there's a full moon or almost a full moon shining, it sort of spoils the effect. You have to go out on a really dark night. So the night we went out, we were lucky. It was the last night that they were going to do this before it was a three-quarters moon. So we lucked out in that. So we went and we drove to part of this the national park that is now the land where the Navy had. And we parked the bus. We went in the school bus. And we went out on a dock, and there was our pontoon boat. And we all put on our life jackets, of course. We went out on the pontoon boat, and we motored. By the way, they always only use electric motors there in this bay because they don't want the hydrocarbons from the exhaust to get into the bay, which would be detrimental to these organisms. You know, if you use an outboard motor, it gives off. Well, the old outboard motors used to be mixed with oil and gas, and they were terrible to use because they gave off a lot of pollution. So what we did was we went out on this boat with electric motor, and we got to a spot, and we jumped off the boat. And as soon as you hit the water started to glow. It was like billions of stars in the water. And if it was a clear night overhead, you could see the stars overhead and the stars in the bioluminescent bay. It's really a beautiful, beautiful place. And there are two of these bays on the mainland of Puerto Rico also. But the one on Vieques, I think, is the best. So I'm going to stop here now and take a short break. And remember, our sponsor today is Hearst Farms, raisers of organic beef. And I'll be back in a minute with the rest of Puerto Rico. Hi, this is Bernie Wides back on the air with the Naturalist Tour of Puerto Rico. Of course, we didn't see the whole place because you'd have to spend a month in Puerto Rico to see all the different ecosystems like the rainforest, the dry forest, the mountains, the Atlantic coast, the Caribbean coast. So it's a great place to go, and I really recommend it. The Puerto Rican folks are glad you're there, and tourism is becoming a big industry. And it's a great visit. We spent about 10 days in Puerto Rico, and we stayed in three different places, so it was very nice. Okay, so the next thing we did was we flew back to San Juan, and we rented a car, and we drive west towards the western end of the island. If you can picture Puerto Rico, it's sort of oval shape, and one side faces the north side faces the Atlantic Ocean, and the south side faces the Caribbean. So we were heading towards the middle of Puerto Rico because we had found in a guidebook, I think Lonely Planet, a place called TJ Ranch, which was in the middle of the mountains. So we wanted to have a change from the coast, from the beaches, which the beaches were beautiful. So we drove west, and our purpose of going to this particular place was that the ranch that we stayed in, called TJ Ranch, was close to two things, two must-sees in Puerto Rico. One is the radio telescope at Arecibo, which is on the almost on the north central coast, and right near it are limestone caves. And the limestone caves, if you ever gone to a limestone cave, you know what they look like. And the most famous ones in this part of the country are Howe Caverns upstate New York, Mammoth Caves, I think, in Kentucky or West Virginia, and there are some other caves in Texas also, the limestone caves. So what we did was we drove west from Puerto, from San Juan, about, I think it was about 80 miles, on a very nice road. And then we had to turn off the main highway and head south into the mountains. So let me talk about the mountains first of all. Okay, these, you know, I don't know if I mentioned it, but Puerto Rico is on a part of an archipelago of volcanic islands that most of the Caribbean islands are made of. So they're made of a basaltic rock, which is a volcanic rock. Then they have an overburden, that means an overlayer of limestone. And the limestone, where did the limestone came from? Come from? It came from the shells of creatures, sea creatures, like clams and oysters and mussels and all those creatures that have shells when the sea level was much higher and these islands were underwater. So the limestone formation, this limestone formation is called a karst, K-A-R-S-T. And the name karst is from an old German word that meant barren land. And in Europe, there are the same karst formations and limestone caves. Let's see if I can look at my notes and I'll come across it in a little while. So anyhow, we wanted to go to see the caves, and we wanted to go see the radio telescope in Arecibo. So first, I'll talk about the telescope. Well, let's see. First, I'll talk about the ranch a little bit. So we drove west and then south about 10 miles where we had to turn off into a little mountain road. Now, the two people who own TJ Ranch, Tony and Joan, are really terrific. First of all, when I called up to make a reservation, Tony answered the phone, and I listened to his accent, and it didn't sound too much like Puerto Rico. It sounded like New York City. So I said, Tony, where are you from originally? He says, I was born in Puerto Rico, but then my family moved to New York, and I grew up in Washington Heights. You know, that's upper Manhattan. He says, then when I was older, a teenager, we moved back to Puerto Rico. So he had a great New York accent. So Tony said to me, if you want to make a reservation, you're going to have to call back when my partner Joan is here, because I'm just the chef, and I don't make the reservations. So I called back and spoke to Joan, and she made the reservations, and she sent us terrific driving instructions. And we really needed them because we were in the middle of the mountains, this karst formation of limestone mountains, which are beautiful. And the formation is a very, very hilly. Picture a topography where you have constant up and downs and up and downs, where you have mountain peaks, and then you have valleys, and then you have peaks and valleys. That's this karst formation because the limestone is sitting on top of a lot of older rocks. And the interesting thing about limestone formations is limestone is a very rock that's easily chemically eroded away. So if it rains and there's some carbon dioxide in the air, like we put out a lot of it, the carbon dioxide combines with the moisture in the air and it starts to chemically decompose the rock, forming beautiful formations. And the same thing happens underground and forming caves. So I'll talk about the caves a little bit later. But the radio telescope was put in Arecibo, Puerto Rico, because there was a huge valley formed by a huge sinkhole. If anybody's from Florida, they know about sinkholes. It's the same kind of limestone rock. If the water flows underground and keeps eating away at the rocks above, eventually the rocks above will collapse, forming a sinkhole. So the Arecibo telescope, which is a radio telescope, I'll explain that in a minute, was built in one of these sinkholes. But you have to picture the reflector. Well, you all know about the satellite TVs, and the dish that's used to collect the satellite signals is a parabolic reflector. So this radio telescope has a parabolic reflector that's 1,000 feet across. So it was in a huge valley that it was put there. So I'm going to keep you in suspense a little bit. I'm not going to tell you how a radio telescope works or why I went to see it. So I'll jump back to the ranch. So we checked into the ranch, and it used to be, years ago, a really working ranch where they had animals. They had goats and chickens and lambs and all kinds of farm animals. But they really found it tough making a living there. So what they've done now is they, first of all, they have 40 acres of land, and they own this beautiful valley, part of the karst formation, and it's a rainforest. So when you drive there, you start at a little above sea level, and then you start climbing up the mountain roads. And at the bottom of this karst formation, there's a beautiful lake called Lake Bocas, Dos Bocas, which means the lake with the two mouths, because the lake has one way for the water to get in and one for the water to get out. So it's called the lake with the two mouths. So we had to drive on these country roads, which were very, very intricate. And luckily, Joan had given us very good directions. We made a few wrong turns, but we ended up down at the dam over the lake, and we got a look at the lake. And then we started climbing up. And we drove up and up and up on switchback roads and on roads without any guardrails. If you looked over the edge, you looked down 1,000 feet. So if you're a little queasy about that, let your partner drive or find some other way to get there. But it really was a beautiful ride. And after we did it a few times, we sort of got used to it. So we drove up to the ranch, and they had told us when you get to the ranch, beep the horn, and they would let us in. They said, or call us on the cell phone. So we beeped the horn, and nobody came to open the gate. But then we called them on the cell phone, and we got in to see to the ranch, and now they have three casitas. Now, casitas are like little cabins. If you've ever been in camp, you know what little cabins look like. If you've gone to motels many years ago, they were like little cabins. So these casitas or little cabins were very nicely built, very plain interiors, and they had a bedroom and a huge bed, a private toilet, all screened in, a screened-in porch, and they were sitting in the rainforest with plants around us that they had planted, coffee trees, and other kind of tropical fruit trees and vegetables. So when we come back, I'll tell you a little bit more about the ranch and about Arecibo, the radio telescope. Hi, this is Bernie Wides, the Naturalist, back on the air, and I left myself in Puerto Rico, which we recently went to, and it was terrific. And I was telling you about the TJ Ranch, and Tony and Joan, who were the hosts there. It's a great place to go. They make you feel like family immediately. I said, as soon as we got there, Tony, the chef, came out and said hi to everybody, and he said, come on, sit down in the dining area, and I'll make you serve you one of the drinks that I make. Now, I think it had alcohol in it. I don't know what he made it out of, but it was really good. It was like homebrew, and it was delicious. And this structure where we ate in was a huge structure that they had built, because at one time it was a public restaurant, and that wasn't so good. So you eat like out on a terrace, so it's a combination, sort of a rec room area and a terrace, and the food was fantastic. Tony is a great chef. He asks you what you would like. He gives you a list of many things, because there's no place to shop there. He has to go into town to get all the supplies. And his food was delicious. It's the first time I had conch made into a sort of a stew, and that was good. And everything he served was delicious. So it's a bed and breakfast place, and you get the casita, and you get a great breakfast. Whatever you want, Tony will make for you. And Joan is the information person. She knows all about the area. If you're interested in birding or bird watching, it's terrific. They have an expert who they can call, who come and give you a guided bird tour. And as I said, it's in this beautiful karst limestone formation, and we had a great time staying there. And one day we drove up to Arecibo. Now, Arecibo was only 7 miles from there, as the crow flies, in a straight line. But to take these mountain roads, it took us an hour to get there, because you had to drive down the mountain and then drive up another one. But it certainly was worthwhile. So Arecibo, I said, is a radio telescope. Now, most people are familiar with optical telescopes, like the big ones on Mount Palomar and all over the world. And the object of the large optical telescopes is to collect as much light as possible, to see what's out there in our solar system and beyond. And why do they build them so big? Because the bigger the telescope you have, the bigger the mirror, the more light you can collect. And the information comes from the light. So if you remember your high school physics, the electromagnetic spectrum, that light, visible light, is only a small part of the electromagnetic spectrum. And if you go on the picture gallery after the show was over. I put up a diagram of the electromagnetic spectrum, and you look in the middle, you see it's only a narrow part of the energy coming from the sun and from other stars and other things. So most of the energy coming to us to the Earth, besides visible light, so there's more energy that's not visible light than that there is visible light. So some forms of this invisible energy are X-rays, microwaves, radio waves, and some other stuff mixed in between it. So the radio telescope in Arecibo was designed to pick up radio waves coming from possibly distant civilization, because they figured if the civilization is advanced enough to try to communicate with us, they would do it in the radio wave frequency. Because radio waves travel a great distance, and they don't lose a lot of energy coming through the atmosphere, whereas light loses energy coming through the atmosphere to get to the Earth. So they built, as that was the original goal, but now it's used for investigating other bodies in the heavens by use of, as I said, radio energy. So that's why it's called a radio telescope. So if you look at it, sunk in the ground, as I said, there's this huge parabolic reflector that's 1,000 feet across. You couldn't build an optical telescope this size, because the mechanical problems of building a glass mirror that size are almost impossible. Even though the new telescopes, the optical ones now, they're building a bunch of mirrors and are ganging them together, it would be a very difficult project. But this one has been successful in learning things about other stars. And you know, the stars are very far away from us. Some of them are light years away from us. And one light travels in one light year 6 trillion miles, to give you an idea. Some of these stars are 10, 15, 20, 50, 100 light years away from us. So they can find out a lot about stars and quasars and other things in our solar system by using this radio telescope. So we went there. They have a terrific little museum next to it. And in the museum, it's a hands-on. If you have kids, they'll have a good time playing with the information. And they also show a film, which was okay. It shows about a life in the day of a scientist that comes there, because scientists can come there as guests and sign on for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, and they could come and do their research there. And we met one of the scientists and a teacher from a university in California who had brought his students. They were doing a project. They were doing the research on the telescope, and then when they got back home, they were going to write up their research. So the telescope was a great place to visit, and I would recommend it. So the other place to visit is the caves. Now, when we were staying at Tony's and Joan's ranch, and you have to remember it's in the rainforest. So what do you get in the rainforest? You get rain. Okay, what's the definition of a rainforest? You have to have at least 60 inches of rain a year to become a rainforest. And around this part of the country, right here in Brooklyn, we don't get that much. We get about 40 inches of rain, which is distributed hopefully when we need it. But remember that last March, it was a record month for rainfall. So it'll probably go over this year. But a rainforest, a temperate rainforest, we could have that in the United States. But a tropical rainforest, you can only have south of Florida and the Caribbean and that latitude around the Earth. So this was the ranch was in this rainforest, so it was very lush. And as I said, they have coffee trees planted there. And I don't remember if they also had pineapple trees, or they had citrus trees also. So they tried to grow everything, and they were successful at some things, and they weren't successful at other things. But a lot of the vegetables that they grow there are used in the food. For example, I walked along with Tony and then another guest who was there, and they were picking pigeon peas, which are little peas, like, you know, peas are, I think they may be legumes like beans. They're probably in the same family. So they were picking pigeon peas, which then Tony used for dinner. You know, beans and rice are a big staple of the Spanish cultures in the Caribbean and other places. And Tony used a lot of local stuff to serve his meals. So we were also going to go to the caves. But the morning that we wanted to go, it was raining. And We heard that it's too dangerous to visit the caves when it's raining, because the water runs in the entrance of the caves and it gets very slippery. So we didn't go to those caves. But if you go to Puerto Rico and you go to that area in the mountains, you should try to get to the caves because they're really beautiful. And if you can, stay at the TJ Ranch because it was a terrific place to stay. And I'll give you their email address and their phone number. So it's tjranch.com. And their phone number is 787-880-1217. And by the way, your cell phone works very well in Puerto Rico. And I don't think there's a surcharge. So we use cell phone all the time there. And it worked in most places. And remember, it's Tony and Joan. And you call them up and tell them that Bernie told you about it, Bernie the Naturalist, they'll be glad to hear from you. And so I said that we went to the radio telescope, which was terrific, and we were going to go to the caves, which we didn't go to. So just a word or two more about the cave formation. Remember I said that it's a limestone formation, and the water percolates into the ground and forms underground rivers and streams, and the underground rivers and streams pick up carbon dioxide and form a mild carbonic acid. And the carbonic acid eats away at the limestone. So if you've ever been in a cave and you notice stalactites and stalagmites, that's all formed by water flowing through it at one time. And then if the water dries up or gets diverted somewhere else, then you have drips from the ceiling. And when the drips hit the floor, they're called stalagmites. But if they're coming down from the ceiling, they're called stalactites. So you could remember that. That's a good trivia thing. Remember stalactites. They have to be tight to stay on the ceiling, and stalagmites grow upward from the floor of the cave. And that's a great place to visit also. So you can do it all in Puerto Rico. And the last thing in Puerto Rico I want to talk about is this animal that, what we did from after we left Tony and Jones, we drove to the South Shore, the Caribbean, and we stayed at a beautiful resort right on the Caribbean where we went snorkeling. And it was really nice. The water was warm, and I mean warm like a bathtub, and it was clear. And they have a little island off the coast there that they've named Gilligan's Island. And I guess most of you could remember Gilligan's Island from TV where there were all kinds of fiascos always going on. But there's a little ferry boat that goes out to Gilligan's Island, and it's called the Gilligan's Island Ferry. But the reason we went out there was it was only a 10-minute ride from this resort. And you could snorkel out there around the island. It was very shallow and a very safe place for snorkeling, even for kids. And it's a red mangrove island. That means they have all these beautiful red mangrove roots growing out into the water. And you could snorkel around the roots. And the red mangrove roots are a great nursery ground for young fish and other critters that live in the oceans. So we had a great time snorkeling there, and then we took a boat out from this resort that we were staying out to the reef, and we did some snorkeling. The only trouble was it was a little windy and there was a chop. And you know, it's difficult to snorkel when the wind has made the water a little choppy. And so we had a little trouble with the snorkeling, but the guy leading the trip was very good. He led us on a little tour of the reef. So that worked out nicely also. So the last critter I'm going to talk about in Puerto Rico, you may never see, but if you go to Puerto Rico, you'll certainly hear them. It's called a coqui, and the sound of the coqui is like this, coqui, coqui, coqui. And you may have guessed that the coqui is a tiny tree frog. And it's all over the island. And coquis are part of a classification of tree frogs that are very numerous. There are 16 different species living on Puerto Rico. There are 600 species worldwide. And the interesting thing about the coqui, first of all, it's tiny. The Latin name for it, you know, the scientific name is Elithrodidactylus. So that word as it's printed out in my notes is about an inch and a half long. And that's the size of the coqui. It's a tiny little tree frog. And all night long, the coqui sings, especially in the breeding season. So when we were out in the rainforest at Jones and Tony's, we heard this serenade all night long. Coqui, coqui. And after a while, you get used to it. Doesn't keep you awake. They had a couple of chickens on the place that made more noise than the coquis. And what makes them interesting, besides them being tree frogs, well, first of all, You think of frogs as swimming in the water. For frogs to swim in the water, they have to have webbed feet. The kokis don't have webbed feet. They have suction discs on their toes, just like iguanas do and other lizards. So they can climb up a glass wall if they had to and without any trouble. So I remember when we were at a different island years ago, I don't remember which one it was, we found some of these tree frogs in our bathroom because they're really very common. But the interesting thing about these little tree frogs called the koki is that when we were kids or when even now, you probably remember that when frogs copulate, they have external fertilization. The female will lay eggs and the male who mounts her will release his sperm and to fertilize the eggs. And then the eggs will either be they'll be in water or they'll be in a bromeliad plant that has a little cup of water. They grow on trees. These are tree plants. And the eggs hatch into tadpoles. So you all may have had experiences with tadpoles in one time of your life or another, because that's the way most frogs develop. The male will fertilize the female's eggs. She will lay the eggs, and the eggs will start to develop, and they'll develop into tadpoles. And then the tadpoles will hatch out of the eggs, and they will swim around. It depends on the species. Maybe there'll be a tadpole for a week, a month, a year. Not quite a year, but a shorter time. And if you want to see some of this happening, right now at the Museum of Natural History in New York City, my favorite museum, there's an exhibit called Snakes and Lizards. And there may be some frogs in that exhibit. I don't really remember. No, probably not. I think I'm making a mistake. The frogs exhibit is gone for this year, but it will be back next winter because it's so popular. And there you'd get a chance to see a lot of these little frogs. So anyhow, in the case of the koki, their reproduction strategy is different. So what happens is that the female will have eggs and the male will fertilize her internally. He'll mount the female and inseminate the female with his sperm, and the eggs will develop, and then the female will lay the eggs and the male will guard the eggs. Now, instead of this process of from eggs to tadpoles to adults, they skip the middle stage of the tadpole. So developing in these eggs are miniature frogs. And if you look at the eggs, you can see these little miniature frogs in there. And when the time comes for them to burst out of the eggs, all they have is a little tiny tail, reminiscent of the other frogs, which are tadpoles at this stage of their life. So the kokis, and they don't develop into tadpoles. They developed into a mature, tiny frog. The only thing it has is a little long tail. But if you go to Puerto Rico, you'll certainly hear about the kokis. So remember, the call of the koki goes like this. Koki! Koki! And with those sounds of wisdom, I'm going to sign off for today and enjoy my program on Puerto Rico. And we'll have more interesting shows in the future on the Heritage Radio Network. Bernie Wides, the naturalist, sponsor Hearst Ranch.